Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. Today, we welcome Professor of Music and Director of Choral Activities at UW-Parkside, Dr. James Kinchin. James, you had what can only be described as an incredible summer, I would imagine. And the highlight, one of the highlights, welcoming a choir from China to perform here at UW-Parkside and then taking a UW-Parkside group of vocalists to China to perform there. Must have been an amazing, amazing experience.
It's as amazing as it sounds. It was really profoundly life-changing for all of us who were a part of it.
Wow. Well, how did it come about? How did the whole exchange come about?
So once upon a time, and that's going to be back in the summer of 2017, I believe.
Okay.
We had the wonderful opportunity to host a colleague whom we did not know, but the connection was made through the auspices of Dr. George Wang, who is our China liaison, and to host the colleague, Dr. Lily Zhang, to come to the campus. Mm-hmm. Now, it happens that she's a musician, and she's also a music administrator at Zhanghan University in Wuhan, China.
Okay.
So this sort of was, and what I heard about it, and George said, "Are you interested?" I was like, immediately, yes. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So she came to our campus, and she had a pretty extended residency. She sang with me in university chorale, and she also sang with me in Master Singers. We were preparing Handel's Messiah for a December performance that year.
Okay.
And we were just delighted to have her, and she was had really wonderful engagement with us. In addition to singing, there would be some questions that she would have. She was particularly interested in knowing how we prepared our music educators who were going to be in choral music.
Oh, okay.
And she also prepared quite a fine recital that focused mostly on classical Chinese music of her culture for piano and voice.
Mm.
And that was well attended, and she received standing ovations as a result of that performance.
Wow.
But in that time, she became interested in having me go to her university and to do a residency there, not nearly as long as the one that she did here, but I was really eager to do that. So I went there.
In 2017.
So now it's 2018.
Semester. Okay.
So May of 2018, and I did a residency there that had me doing master classes with their conductors, their choral conducting students, and also working with their choir. We already had begun at that point to fashion the framework for the exchange and what the performances would be like.
Right.
Huh. And so she wanted me to come and to work with them on some songs from our Western choral repertory, which I was really happy to do, with the understanding that the next year we would do the exchange that you're talking about, the Two Worlds, One Art exchange.
Right.
That had them coming first, their choir, their students, and some faculty coming first to us in May, and then we exchanged with the visit the next month.
Right. Amazing. When you first had the was May of 2018 the first time that you had had the opportunity to travel to China?
Yes.
Yes. And what were some of the similarities, differences you may have encountered in terms of how vocal music is either taught or appreciated or instructed between China and here in the U.S.? Mm-hmm. Was there differences or kind of similar?
Yeah, there are obviously some, maybe not obviously, but there are some similarities, and it is on that bridge of commonality that both of the groups were able to fashion some kind of exchange.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there are differences. So, for example, the American choral tradition, what we call the choral tradition here in this country, is rooted deeply in the history of Europe. Okay, and so we go all the way back to the Middle Ages and the Renaissance in terms of the pieces that are part of the canon that make up American choral music.
Okay.
And then, of course, when you get into the 19th century, you have more and more American composers writing. Mm. Then in the 20th century, there is this veritable cornucopia of American compositions that come from a number of different places, not least of which are the African-American composers who are now taking some of the songs, the slavery songs that have been called spirituals, and making choral arrangements of them. We have other composers taking American materials and doing something creative with them. I was listening to a recording on the radio just this morning of Aaron Copland, who's a wonderful example of that. So the whole choral repertory has been enlarged, and there are quite a few pieces now that we sing on a regular basis that are by American composers, American arrangers, and so forth. But many of the quote-unquote classics in our tradition go back to Europe. Now, to contrast that with what one finds in China, probably most of what I heard, and I'll have to qualify, because there's probably a universe of stuff I didn't hear.
Yeah.
But what I heard is more firmly rooted in Chinese folk origins. And the Chinese choral tradition that begins to in any way resemble what we do in the West is only about 100 years old. And like I said, it's mostly these arrangements or settings of Chinese folk music or original composition that has been heavily influenced by some of the expressive artistic values of Chinese folk music that we hear. So it's quite, on the whole, it's quite a different thing, and yet at the same time, they use the same notation systems, the same sort of tonal systems, keys, major keys, F major here is F major there, sort of thing. And so it's a real sort of interesting thing. The one drawback that exists for those of us in the West who want to do Chinese choral music is that even though we can read the notes because they're just like our notes, the text is done in Chinese symbols.
So right. Right. Yeah,
so you have to have somebody who knows the language to transliterate it so that you can do it phonetically, because you can't read, well, I can't, and my students can't read the Chinese symbols.
Interesting. What were some of the, I don't want to say challenges, but I'm sure there were challenges as far as preparing to welcome the visitors from China here at UW Parkside in May of this year? What sort of things did you work on there together to make that a smooth transition?
Well, one of the things that, and in my opinion, I think is probably a fairly basic thing that we wanted to ensure, is that our students understood sort of the nature of the kind of hospitality that we should be extending. And that may sound like a small thing, but it's really huge. When I was there in May of 2018, people really reached out to me and were just really generous and gracious in helping me to feel welcome and helping me to feel a part of what was happening there. I mean, I had space. I had, time to kind of be alone and to do those things I needed to do. I wasn't smothered.
Yeah.
But people were really, really interested in knowing that I was getting on well.
Wow.
So it's sort of say to our students, like, this is important. Mm-hmm. And, our students, I'm sure, many of them, most of them perhaps, juggle a whole lot of different things. They've got the classes here, they've got the job there, they've got this there, they've got that there. And to really sort of help them understand that this is a moment where we've got to really focus a lot on our guests and spend some time with them and not just have them sitting over in the rooms, staring at the walls, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I think our students understood that. And then, of course, that lesson was reinforced for them when we went over there, mm-hmm. and they were recipients. They were then recipients
yeah.
of the hospitality that they that the Chinese had to offer.
Right.
The logistical stuff was a little bit less of a challenge. You know, we had the dormitory rooms for them, and the accommodation seemed to be fine for them. Mm-hmm. We had meals for them. As a part of our food service, mm-hmm. that was one point where I just kind of grabbed the faculty colleagues and put them in my car and took them down to one of these, you know, all-you-can-eat places, which I probably shouldn't go to too often. But so that they had a taste of what you know this kind of plentiful Americana, translated into anything you dare eat and three or four times more calories than you probably ought to consume.
Right.
But the musical piece of it was not so difficult. We planned time for them, you know, in consultation with them before they even came,
mm-hmm.
time for them to rehearse mm-hmm. over in our space. And that was the priority. And then what time should the two of us rehearse together? And we had already planned the structure of the concert, which helped a great deal. Each program would be 15 pieces in all.
Okay.
Five pieces would be done by them.
Oh, okay.
Five pieces would be done by us.
Right.
And then five pieces would be done together.
Yeah.
Even to the point of figuring out what the piece was that we would sing together that would be in Mandarin, which we did. Mm-hmm. I was hoping initially that we would have been able to do a couple of pieces in Mandarin, but that one piece of everything was late coming together. Mm-hmm. But that was the right piece to do. I mean, I picked it out of a number of possibilities, having no idea really how right the choice would be.
Yeah.
In that it would move the students and it would move the audiences. And it was quite a thing. But yeah, so those were some of the challenges, I think. The one thing that if we could do it over, that I would do differently or counsel differently, it's not totally my decision to make, would be to find a few more opportunities for them to get out into sort of the community we did. They did get off campus. We did take them to a number of very interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at their university, it's situated right in the middle of a very busy kind of commercial area, uh-huh. light commercial area.
Uh-huh.
And you can walk off the campus and you're here, you're there at this shop or that store. And our campus, by nature, is sort of isolated.
Right, yeah.
And so I would have structured a few more opportunities for them to go to spend half a day, you know, at a shopping mall, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Right.
And that sort of thing. To go and hang out at a grocery store for an hour.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, we're joined by Professor of Music, Dr. James Kinchin, and we're talking about two worlds, one art, and the exchange between UW Parkside and University in China, a musical exchange. Dr. Kinchin, what I'm guessing that probably between the Chinese students and UW Parkside students, when the Chinese students come to Parkside, that relationships develop, that when Parkside students get a chance then to go to China, it's almost like going to see someone, seeing a friend or someone that you've made an important acquaintance with.
That's a very, very apt description, and that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. It's sort of funny. So I think about the first day that they were here. In fact, I was one of a handful of people who actually went to O'Hare to welcome them, and, uh-huh. and you know, they got on the bus and they came back to campus, and then it was meal time. A few of my students were sort of standing there, saying, "Well, I don't know what to say." "Well, that's okay. Go and sit down.
Sure.
Go. You know, I was kind of being like the parent, you know, saying to the kid, "Get out and go." But then they began to really communicate with each other. And, you know, the students always, if there's a technology to be had, They all locate it and they'll use it. So they found translation technologies, you know, what this word means, what that word means. And friendships did begin to develop. And it was like a reunion when we got over there. That is absolutely, absolutely what happened.
Yeah.
And by the time we got ready to leave, there were more than a few students with red eyes and teary faces.
Sure.
Because they were, you know, now leaving friends that they had made.
Yeah.
And I suspect will continue to make, will continue to have, you know, contact with now that they've made those friendships.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that you mentioned as we're starting the program today, life changing the opportunity to meet someone where 30, 40 years from now, you're still in contact with that person. Mm-hmm. And as the world continues to be a place where it's much easier to communicate with people and much almost like in real time, no matter where you are on the face of the planet, that becomes life changing for the students as well.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, the communications framework that we used as a part of that trip and then since is WeChat, and so we're able to communicate with them on WeChat. I discovered WeChat through them when I was there in May.
Yeah,
and then when we went over as a group, we have a WeChat group, a China group. And then connections with all of the students and
interesting. Now, what? Tell us about the performances in China. How many times did UW Parkside students get the opportunity to perform, or what was that like?
Well, the structure of that was pretty similar to what it was here, and that was by arrangement. There would be two performances here.
Mm-hmm.
And two performances there. Our performances here were in Bedford Hall and then at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Racine.
Okay.
And so when we went there, we did one performance. It was actually in sort of an auditorium, I guess combination lecture hall auditorium, in the School of Business at Zhonghan University.
Okay.
And then the other performance was at a place called the Youth Palace, which was in another section of Wuhan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really, really nice concert hall. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, somebody who's in music, and particularly, I think, choral musicians, we particularly treasure the acoustics of a place because that makes the sound come alive and have a resonance. That doesn't happen if you're in a place that's very dead and where, you know, the sound gets soaked up.
Yeah.
And so we had, and in the School of Business, the acoustics were not very good, but they used mics to enhance the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And that was workable for that situation. There was a good crowd there. And I'm told that the crowd at the Youth Palace actually sold out.
Oh, wow.
So we were just really, really happy to. And the audiences, particularly the Youth Palace audience, they were very effusive. They really showed appreciation for us. And it was, you know. And I was telling you about the song that we did in Mandarin. That was the finale of the program.
Yeah.
But, you know, both choirs together.
Yeah.
And the English translation of the title is "The Moon Represents My Heart."
Oh,
And we sang that, and people in the audience were just because they knew that. It was a song that was sort of part of their culture as well. You know, and at some point, people were clapping. Although it's not a very fast song, they were clapping, and then Professor Wong wanted us to sing it one more time, and you know, and it was quite the experience.
Wow. What sort of now that's in the recent past, when you talk to students who had a chance to go and be a part of that, what are the things that they either remember or highlights that they take back with them?
Well, so I guess it's fair to say, based on the students that I have spoken with about the performance, you know, let's say come September, you know, as we begin the school year.
Right.
The first thing that they have to get around is just sort of the sense that this was a surreal experience.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I had more than one student say, you know, I can't believe I was there. I can't believe that that happened. It was that much of an impact on them.
Sure.
But I think I'm fairly representing students when I say that maybe tops on the list was the kind of interpersonal, intercultural connections that they made.
Mm-hmm.
That here were people from a culture halfway around the world that we, you know, we hear about on and read about on the news, and there's always something that's sort of oppositional.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
You know,
right.
You know, it's tariffs, it's this, it's that, it's the other. And yet we were able to connect with them as human beings, as college student to college student, as musician to musician, and become friends in that way. And I think that would be the first thing on that list. And then the opportunity to make music. By the way, my people sang really well, and I was really proud of that.
Yeah.
Because that was important to me. I think any time that you represent yourself as an artist, then you want to do a really quality job with the art that you're representing.
Sure,
And I was really proud of how well they did, what they did. But I think that's number one.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many Parkside students took part in the exchange?
Well, we had, I think, about 12 or 13 to actually take part.
Okay.
You know, one person who went and sang with us was one of our fine alums.
Okay.
But we had about 13 students. Two of the students who went along in sort of support and auxiliary capacities. Mm. They did not sing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the actual singing group then numbered 11.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it sounds like an amazing experience.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. It was. You know, and one of the things that, I hope I'm not impermissibly letting cats out of the bag on this, but that initially it was a kind of a hard sell for students to get students to participate in this.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, financially it was made very reasonable. Mm-hmm. And this gives me an opportunity too, because the listeners ought to know that one of the strongest, most stalwart champions of this trip was our dean, Leslie Walker. Mm-hmm. She was amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, bought into the project from the very beginning, believed in it, championed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even to the point where students who were financially disadvantaged and seemed like they weren't going to be able to go on that basis, she went out and she raised some money.
Wow.
To really make that accessible to every student who wanted to go. So
Fantastic. She was
absolutely amazing. You know, my hat's off to her.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
But it was a bit of an effort. And I think part of it obviously is the financial piece, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
There are some schools where you know, parents routinely write checks for, you know, $20,000 and $30,000 for the kid to go to school in a year, and most of our kids don't come from that kind of background,
so
money is a little harder to come by. But it was also, I think, the fact that this was an experience that would be half a globe away in a nation that seemed very foreign and very exotic to people if you haven't been there,
right.
And it was a little bit daunting, I think, at first for students. But every single person, to the last person, is so glad they made the choice.
Wow.
Oh, I'm glad I went. This was awesome. This was amazing.
Wow. Fantastic. Yeah. That's great. And I congratulate you on the success of that, because knowing that, you know, things like that just don't happen without a great deal of work behind the scenes mm-hmm. and preparing to make sure that it's a successful event. So congratulations on that. We're talking with Professor of Music, Dr. James Kinchin, and let's shift gears a little bit and talk about master singers. You have Master Singers again this year. And tell us about, for someone who may not be familiar with what UW-Parkside Master Singers are all about, tell us about Master Singers.
Well, you don't have to twist my arm too hard to talk about Master Singers. Master Singers is our campus community choir. And when I came here to the university in the fall of 1980, actually it was summer when I got here, one of the things that I was real curious about is what kinds of choral offerings and opportunities were there that were open to the community.
Right,
because even then, one of the real strong tenets of the university was to really engage the community and to find ways of serving the community with what we did. And so, you know, the choral thing is something that ought to be there to serve the community as well.
Sure.
So I found out that there wasn't anything, and I said, well, we've got to have something. And so I began making plans for that. And, you know, you go through all of the sort of bureaucratic hurdles, which in our case was to write it up as a chorus proposal and to get it to pass through the requisite faculty committees and academic affairs and all of that. But we were able then, in January of 1990, to begin this group called Master Singers.
Wow.
You know, the name, you know, I think the name has served us pretty well, although I'm sure there are some people who maybe have been discouraged from coming because they figured that by the name Master Singers, people have to be really, really, really good.
Mm.
And that's not the case. A choral group is a team. And in the same way that you have, so for example, you know, most people around here can relate to Packers, right? You know, you have an Aaron Rodgers who's obviously the superstar of stars on the team, you know.
Yeah.
But everybody's not an Aaron Rodgers. Everybody doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. And people have roles, and all of those roles, when people perform them well and when they come together in synergy, then that creates a winning team.
Yeah,
and so it's
yeah.
the same thing with the choral group, you know. In fact, you maybe don't want to have a choir where everybody's a diva, you know. But the name was chosen primarily because we thought our focus would be the extended pieces, mostly for choir and orchestra, the so-called masterworks. And that's the way it's been.
Yeah.
It's not the only thing we've done, but that's what we focused on.
Right.
And so in those years, and by the way, those years, what makes this particularly significant for us is that this is our 30th season.
Right.
Okay, we started in the 1989-90 academic year, and now we are 30 years later.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. But it's amazing. And so we've done a whole plethora of things. You know, Handel's Messiah has been something that we've done on a triennial basis. We started in 93, and every 3 years we've done a series of that in its entirety with orchestra. But we've also done other things.
So is this year, this year is Handel?
Next year's Handel.
Okay.
This year we're going to do a concert of Magnificats. And the Magnificat, for people who may not know, is simply a setting of Mary's song in response to the news that she would bear a son, you know.
Okay.
And some of the greatest inspirations the composers have experienced is having a text like that to set to music. So the J.S. Bach Magnificat is sort of like the big dog that we're doing, but we're doing other settings of it as well. And then, of course, in 2020, we will do Handel's Messiah.
Again. Right. Wow. And what about someone who is maybe interested in becoming part of Master Singers? How does a person go about doing that?
Well, gosh, they just come. You know, I would like to know that they're coming so that I can meet them a little before the rehearsal and get to hear them sing. And hearing them sing is basically just kind of seeing what their voice quality and range is like.
Sure.
They don't have to have a prepared solo of any kind. And it's nothing that's sort of strenuous. I've not had one person that I have said, oh, gosh, I don't think you better sing. You know, the one exception to that, there was a guy some years ago who had sung opera, he wasn't from the Met or whatever, but he had sung opera.
Yeah.
And by his own admission, he said, I just need to sing out, and that may be too strong for you. Uh-huh. And so he said a rehearsal, and he said, well, no, I think I'm too much of a soloist. Uh-huh. And so he kind of took himself out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, everybody who comes, we want them to sing. Mm-hmm. There are people who come and they haven't sung much at all.
Mm-hmm.
But what's a very typical profile is somebody who has sung maybe in high school and college, yeah, and then life got in the way and they stopped singing. And so it's been 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years or more.
Yeah, yeah,
and they want
to
get back in the game.
Sure.
And
sure,
we're delighted to have people like that to come. So the short answer again is, if you want to, just come. Let me know, Kenshin at uwp.edu,
okay,
and I can meet you before rehearsal and help, hear you and help to determine what section and so forth you'll be in.
And do you have weekly rehearsals?
Have weekly rehearsals. They mm-hmm. are Monday evenings at 7 p.m., 7 to 9:45.
Mm-hmm.
People in the group, this is a longstanding tradition, people in the group take turns bringing refreshments. So at break, everybody has a little something to drink and munch.
Yeah.
It's just become quite a nice community.
Oh,
and we'll do this semester, we'll do a pair of concerts in December 7th and 8th.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a Monday evening rehearsal.
Excellent. And it really, when you think about someone, like you mentioned, that maybe they sang in high school or college and for whatever reason, maybe looking like they wish they had that outlet or that opportunity to do it, but aren't sure of, well, where do I go to find it? Master Singers is certainly an opportunity for that.
Yes, come to us.
Yeah.
Come to us, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. And one more plus, to engage in experience like that, how much does it cost? Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. There is no tuition. There's no fee.
Yeah.
If we have to buy music as opposed to using music that's already in the library,
mm-hmm.
we will ask people to purchase their own music. But that can be as little as $4 or $5 in a semester, mm-hmm. as much mm-hmm. as, $15 or so. It's not very expensive at all.
Yeah.
And it's the best bargain. You just come and sing.
Wow, that's great. We've been chatting with Dr. James Kenshin, professor of music and director of choral activities here at UW Parkside. We've talked about the two worlds, one art, UW Parkside Chinese exchange musical event that took place this summer here at UW Parkside and then also in China. We also learned more about Master Singers. And James, this is your first time on Parkside today, so I'll say you have to come back. And we have to have you on again.
Well, John, you have made it such a delightful experience. I'd be happy to come back anytime and talk with you.
Okay, that sounds good. For James Kenshin, I'm John Melke. You've been listening to Parkside Today. For past editions of Parkside Today, please visit uwp.edu/Parkside Today. Thanks for listening, everybody.